This is the Spark My Muse podcast with me, your host, Lisa DeLay. Hi there, and welcome to episode 2, Wet Dog Fur, Wine, and Daring Greatly. Spark My Muse is the podcast for curious, creative types, wine newbies, and anybody willing to put up with my occasional silliness. Today I'll cover how wine can go to the dogs and how to best store wine in the wine segment, plus a bit about a topic in a book that has made a huge difference in my life lately, especially now that I'm doing a podcast and I'm out there. This episode of Spark My Muse is brought to you by Dog in the Gap. Having a pet in your care who helplessly depends on you for their life and well-being can teach you a lot of things. This book has 10 essays, both funny and insightful, written by two authors, and includes plenty of memorable photos. You can get it at Amazon.com, searching Dog in the Gap. And there's a bonus edition for $1 more. Has an extra essay, some non-public video links, secret links with a few behind-the-scenes things, and other assorted goodies. It's time for the wine segment. Why might your wine taste like wet dog fur and what to do about it? That's next. So, a wine bottle has 25 and a third or so ounces in it. It's 750 milliliters, and a serving of wine is 5 ounces. It goes to about halfway up the glass, and that's a design feature in a glass that brings out the aroma of the wine and kind of keeps the aroma in the glass. When you aerate your glass by sliding it in a circle on the countertop, you start to add a little oxygen to the wine. This brings out both the aroma and also the taste of the wine, and it's what's called in wine terms opening the bouquet of the wine. So technically a wine bottle offers you 5 servings of wine, you and 4 friends. A wine tasting is a 1 ounce pour of a wine, and often wineries will charge you for a tasting and maybe do a couple of tastings of a few different wines. Sometimes what you have when you open a bottle of wine is a corked wine. That's a term given to a wine that has been oxidized. So you might get a glass of wine or open up a bottle and you'll find that it just smells kind of stale or funky. Some people say it will smell like wet newspaper or even wet dog fur, rather unpleasant. So that is because it's been oxidated too much. Wine typically lasts only a few hours after opening, and even if you plug it back up with a cork, you've still trapped air inside. So one of the best things you can do is pump your air out. In the show notes on my website, sparkmymuse.com, I'll have a link to a wine pump that we use at work. It's actually very inexpensive, and after 2 uses, it's paid for itself. For about 24 hours, a wine can stay fairly good once the air is pumped out. But after 24 hours, it really can go downhill, sometimes even smell like wet dog. Another reason wine is stored on its side, as you see in wine racks and so forth, is because that expands the cork. Cork is made out of a bark, and as the liquid goes onto the cork, you have an expansion, which provides a natural seal. Plastic corks are a more recent invention, and they don't expand like natural corks do. So storing your wine on its side doesn't matter if you have a plastic cork. I hope you enjoyed that little tidbit, and if you have any questions about wine, please go ahead and send them to me at contact@sparkmymuse.com, and I'll try to get to them. If I don't know the answers, I'll be sure to research them and get it back to you. On our next podcast, in the wine segment, I'll talk about my favorite tool for opening up wine and why, and which bottle opening tools you should avoid. I knew Brené Brown before she did her famous TED Talk on her research about shame and vulnerability at the University of Houston. She wrote a book called The Gifts of Imperfection. It was really eye-opening for me, and I really enjoyed it a lot. But when she did her TED Talk at the University of Houston, she kind of went viral. And as of today, there's over 19 million views on that talk. It's fantastic, and it helped launch her into the spotlight on a national scale. It even got her on Oprah's BFF list, and she was featured there on Super Soul Sunday. The topics in the book and some of the passages I'd like to share with you today have really gained sort of a new significance for me, because putting up a podcast feels risky. It feels emotionally risky, and I feel vulnerable, and I feel like I might get rejected. Of course, some people will not like it, and I can't really change that for everyone, but I feel like I don't want to fail, and I feel like I don't want to look like an idiot, and looking like an idiot is extremely probable. So I've been sort of welcomed back into the book Daring Greatly. And when we're about to go into unknown territory, if we're doing something that makes us feel more vulnerable, the two main things we tend to think are, who do you think you are? And you're going to look like a fool. And I might add one to that, that you're not going to do it right, which is sort of related to the fool one. And maybe you can think of others that come to mind for you. But when we're doing something and we're stepping out into new territory, it can feel scary and we can feel vulnerable. And we seem to handle other people's vulnerability just fine, but we're sort of reluctant to be vulnerable ourselves. On page 35, Brené Brown says, "I define vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure." And you know, I feel like we can't sometimes risk We can't risk feeling vulnerable if we're dealing with shame. And shame and vulnerability are what she covers in this book. Page 68, she says, "People who don't experience shame lack the capacity for empathy and human connection." And really what she's getting at is shame is natural, it's biological, it's social, because we're social creatures. And if you don't have shame, then really you are a psychopath. She says that in there. So it's really social pain, too. We fear rejection and isolation. On page 76, she says, "Shame derives its power from being unspeakable." And that's really what happens. It goes underground, and we don't want to admit to it. We don't want to be associated with shame, almost like if we speak it, it will get worse. But in fact, the opposite's true. She says, "Language and story bring light to shame and destroy it." Another one on page 71. "Guilt is, I did something wrong. Shame is, I am bad. Shame is, I am something wrong." When we feel shame, we do things like lash out, we get anxious, we hide, we numb out. And really, we need to do all the opposite things of that to have any victory. So really, instead of lashing out or hiding, we need to reach out to somebody that we trust, of course, not someone who's going to make us feel worse. And instead of overcompensating, we need to cut ourselves a break. We need to say something like, "I make mistakes. I'm moving past this one. I know that's what I have to do," or I get really creatively bogged down and I get choked up. Part of starting this podcast series was the unknown of the technical side. And as I delved into it, it was a lot more complicated. And I thought, oh, maybe I can't do this because I'm going to make mistakes. Definitely I'm going to make mistakes, but I still have to do it. Page 80, Brené says, "If I own my own story, I get to write the ending." Recently, I heard a really fascinating talk by Monica Lewinsky, of all people, on the TED Talk. She sounds like someone who's trying to do what Brené advises. She said something like, "It's time for me to take back my own story and control my own narrative." She was a person who literally had to hide in shame when reporters would come buzzing around every few months to ask her a question about something the Clintons said. And she always was associated with the scandal and the embarrassment and the shame and humiliation of the entire internship scandal. So reaching out and being honest creates this environment of empathy. And it's really a life-giving environment. I suppose that's why I'm sharing all of this with you. I'm at the beginning of something new, and I feel afraid. But I also know that if I don't go forward anyway, and if I'm not brave anyway, despite what happens, and despite if I'm well received or if I'm received really poorly, then I will regret it. It will be like a slow death. So I want to encourage you, if you're listening to this and you're afraid to start something, or you are dealing with something that's really shame at its core, don't be afraid to create things and do new things. Don't be afraid to go after things that are your passion and mess up while doing them. I'm messing up a lot as I do this. I'm editing it things all wrong. I'm screwing it up. But if I let my mistakes put a chokehold on me with shame and inaction, I won't be living life really at all. Thank you so much for listening to Spark My Muse. I invite you to subscribe and also visit sparkmymuse.com to see the show notes.